Welcome to the Blue Dot Project podcast, where we share ideas for building regenerative cultures and communities that enable life to thrive on Earth for thousands of years. I'm your host, David Veronikar. If you're new to investing in regenerative projects, you may wonder how to reduce your financial risks in choosing where to invest. Today, we focus on a way to reduce your investment risk. That approach is to certify projects that are truly regenerative. Certification of regenerative initiatives is likely to be new to you because, in fact, it's new to the whole world. But certifications are common in many other fields. Some food products, for instance, are specifically certified as organic. Products that don't meet the criteria for organic foods can't be labeled as such. Well, now an effort is underway to certify that certain foods are produced regeneratively. About 5 fairly new regenerative certification approaches are available for food products. Each has somewhat different criteria. Here's another example of certification. LEEDS, that's LEEDS certifications, indicate the energy efficiency and overall sustainability of buildings. The world is still in the early days of defining the criteria that make a project or a community regenerative. You'll see that it's a challenge to establish quantifiable, objective criteria to distinguish among projects that lie somewhere on a spectrum. That spectrum may include projects that are not at all regenerative, barely regenerative, quite regenerative, or leading edge regenerative. Although this topic is subject to refinement in the coming years, we expect certification to be an important element in identifying the relative risk of projects you might invest in. Our guests today are Nicole Reese and Eduardo Esparza. Nicole publishes a popular Substack newsletter on regenerative communities called Terenity. Nicole has spent about 6 years visiting and evaluating intentional communities around the world. She's taken lots of notes and gathered what may be the most comprehensive data available anywhere. The communities Nicole has visited vary widely, from eco-villages in tropical locales to regenerative living spaces in big northern cities. Eduardo is founder and CEO of the Blue Dot Project. He has commissioned Nicole to work on 2 projects that he believes will reduce risks for impact investors. Together, the projects will rate individual regenerative initiatives by 2 related but different criteria. First, how regenerative is a project? And second, which elements of the project are likely to make it a lower risk investment? Why does this matter? As more projects claim to be regenerative in future years, it will be hard to choose the ones that are worth an investor's time and money amid a sea of others that are not. Here's Nicole.
You will see a lot of regenerative this, regenerative that, regenerative community, intentional conscious habitat project, conservation, regenerative agriculture, all of these different types of things that are going to be emerging and already are, as we're seeing. It becomes hard to distinguish what's worth your time. So to develop a certification and to have a way of checking boxes more or less is one way to compare and contrast projects that are worth investing in. And if you're acting in the role of developer, to adhere to standards that help you drive the direction of the project in a way that more likely guarantees success.
Is certification the only way or the primary way for investors to reduce risk? No. Many more methods of risk reduction are also available to potential investors. We'll cover the most important ones in future episodes of this podcast. We start today by answering the most basic questions. What does it mean to certify regenerative projects? What problems does certification try to solve for regenerative investors? And why should certification matter to investors and future participants in regenerative communities? Certification offers much the same value as creating a positive commercial brand. Branding is the promise a company makes to its customers. A company's brand is the result of the promises the company keeps. When customers know and trust a brand, they know and trust exactly what they will get when they buy it. Like branding, certification builds a kind of protective shield around a product or service. A strong brand or a strong certification can protect both customers and service providers against posers or look-alike products that make similar claims but don't deliver the same value as the brand. You've probably seen what a problem greenwashing has become. Organizations may claim their products or services are green, but they really are not. We're likely to see the emergence of something similar for regenerative projects. We call it regen washing. Some companies are likely to claim their projects are regenerative when they're really not. This situation causes doubt and uncertainty for investors. It may cause them to hesitate in backing worthwhile projects. That's bad for everyone who has a stake in the growth of regenerative communities. So we want to establish strong and well-known standards. When a company claims their project is certified regenerative by some published standard, everyone will be able to clearly understand what that means, and everyone can be confident the claims are verified. So it would be helpful for both investors and buyers of products or services to have a trustworthy rating system for regenerative products and projects.
I don't think that regenerative is so much binary as it is more spectrum-based, in that because it's an ideal of the industry and very few projects, for example, achieve fully regenerative systems because there's some sort of energy or resource consumption along the way of development that's not replaced or not in full integrity, especially when we start to introduce quite new concepts around social regeneration and inclusivity. So I don't think of regeneration as binary, but very based on a spectrum. So you start to see what's the tipping point more so, where this makes a worthwhile project to where it's regenerative enough and has aspirations to be even more regenerative in the future. Because we're definitely seeing that it's a journey and it's a transition towards regeneration rather than just a light switch.
Then how do you evaluate how regenerative an individual initiative might be?
I would say that determining just how regenerative it is, how many regenerative practices it employs, determines how worthy of an investment it is to then be able to measure, well, how successful might it be in the implementation of this project? If you're going to be betting on different projects, you want to know which ones will fulfill the full regenerative integrity, and then also have aspects that contribute to longevity and being able to establish and being able to thrive and generate prosperity long-term.
A project may be highly regenerative, but it could also be unlikely to succeed, and vice versa. So there are two factors for investors to consider. One, how regenerative is a project? And two, how likely is it to succeed?
There is a need for understanding what is degenerative, which most of us are already aware of, but putting a finger on that and naming that, and then outlining the opposite. So to create a standard for what is regenerative, you have to know to all of the categories that are contributing to degeneration and what are their opposites.
Investors are looking for project proposals they can present to the board at the family office where they work. They may have to explain to their board exactly how a project will be regenerative. Maybe they also have to distinguish among a dozen or half a dozen other proposals, all of which also claim to be regenerative. Some projects are likely to be more regenerative than others. But today, investors have no way of knowing other than to trust the people who prepare the proposals.
Yes, I agree. I wrote about the difference between just a sustainable community, such as an eco-village, and a truly regenerative village. And I stratify what makes a project regenerative across a couple different categories. It starts for me with the land, and then the infrastructure, and then the architecture and built environment, then the layer of social systems, and then the use of technology and digital infrastructure on top of that. Each of those layers, for me, has different requirements. For example, for a project to be regenerative, it is not acquiring pristine nature and then tearing down trees to houses, right? Unless, of course, for example, the trees that they're tearing down are non-native, and then they're using that for timber and they're replanting native trees. So there's all kinds of different situational aspects that could still make it regenerative, not just the act of, for example, tearing down trees. But in project development, the land and the ecosystem, because these are land-based projects, has to be considered first as a primary layer of importance. And the health of that ecosystem can be considered. And there's a lot of bioregional mapping that you can use to find if an area is at risk or has experienced percentage of biodiversity loss that is sizable. So using those kinds of methods, you can identify pieces that are at risk and focus on those.
How might you work these criteria into an objective rating system?
I stratify regenerative qualifications across 5 different categories. I layer them starting with land and then infrastructure and then architecture and built environment and then social systems and then the use of technology and digital infrastructure layered on top of all of that. So with land, it's essential to start with degraded ecosystems, for example. With infrastructure, it's key to have fully self-sufficient energy systems or aspiration towards net zero emissions. Different technologies can get us there. With built environment, one of the key definers is whether the materials used are sustainably sourced and then also replenished. So the way things are built, if they're designed in a way that makes the buildings smart or makes them more energy efficient or is arranged in such a way that is ontological in design, meaning considering multiple disciplines to make it regenerative, that is also something to consider. With social systems, it's very important to have inclusive, alternative governance and conflict resolution strategies. And then on top of that, the digital infrastructure. There's quite a split in the space on whether or not to use technology, but I always see the implementation of technology should mimic nature, and so that the design and implementation should not be with outside of the bounds of what our natural creature needs in order to be healthy and thriving.
How do you weigh the relative importance of these various elements?
The first 3 layers are non-negotiable, because they form the technical aspects of reaching a regenerative system. The second 2 layers, as it stands, are not need to have, but really nice to have, and form that sort of holistic approach to regeneration, which is really popular in the space, which is integrating social innovations in order to kind of eliminate the mechanisms that got us to degraded ecosystems in the first place.
So far, we've been talking about elements that make a community more regenerative. One goal of certification is to help facilitate the decision process to make it easier, faster, and less risky for the investor. So what factors are likely to make a regenerative community successful from an investor's perspective? If I'm an impact investor, does it meet my goals for impact? Can it generate the kind of return that I'm expecting in the time frame that I want it? An investor might think to herself, I've received this proposal for what's calling itself a regenerative community. It's in this or that bioregion. The project developers say it has these elements or characteristics, and they claim we'd be able to make this much money. But I don't know anything about this kind of deal. I've never done this before. So what litmus tests might I use to figure out if this looks viable or not? What should I consider when I evaluate whether this is a bogus plan or something that I should consider seriously? Does this opportunity appear to be well thought out? Does the proposal cover all the primary factors or elements that need to be considered for a successful project? Does it look economically viable Does it look like it would involve an acceptable level of risk? Is the community likely to be solvent? Is there likely to be demand for the services this community will offer? The proposal says the community will be self-sufficient for energy and 60% self-sufficient for food. Is that viable? These factors and others may be important to help an investor decide whether one proposal merits more serious consideration than another.
For me, it's quite obvious that a certification can boost the worth of an impact investment in a regenerative development, because trust will allow the selling of the product, whether it's consumable goods or hospitality or residential lots, whatever it is, certification boosts trust in the brand. The process of certifying often challenges projects to exceed their own expectations because they have a list of things they need to complete in order to certify. And then there are also levels of certification that they can reach. When I was working for my city government in California, I was helping my city get a citywide certification in LEED. And there are different tiers you can reach for. So very central to the way that I'm going to develop the certification process for Blue Dot is having these different tiers. And naturally, you want to strive for gold, for example, some kind of metaphorical or literal gold standard where you are striving for excellence.
Nicole says certification can also add value by associating a project with a portfolio of other similarly rated projects. When a developer shows they've invested in going through a certification process, investors are more likely to trust that other investors would be willing to buy out original investors who may want shorter-term returns. So if we were to create a list of things investors should be thinking about when they consider investing in a regenerative community, what would be on that list?
This is precisely the work that I'm doing with Blue Dot, is making that list, because we have a lot of different potential criteria, but we don't know which one is more important than the other. So there's everything to look at, from geopolitical climate and location, which can determine things like ease of permitting, to background of the team and the presence of multidisciplinary talent in the people developing. And I have also different theses around the presence of other communities.
What factors are likely to contribute most to the success of a regenerative community?
We're at the stage where we're aware of many factors that influence, but we haven't been able to distill, given unique context, one, which categories are more influential, and two, which ones are situationally dependent. So some legal entities, for example, might work really well in the United States and work much less or not even exist in Latin America. So we're talking about development. It's very regionally contextual. We know governance is important. We've tracked the different types of governance models typically used in different communities, and we're trying to see which ones are more effective. And we've codified the different types of regenerative activities, from ancestral land techniques to different types of agroforestry and regenerative systems and permaculture and agricultural activities that fall in the regenerative spectrum. All of these contribute to success, but we're trying to figure out how exactly and which ones contribute to success more than others. So it is very early stage.
Neither Nicole nor Eduardo Esparza believes that there's any need or benefit to standardizing the way regenerative communities are designed or run. No one knows for sure which elements will enable specific communities to be most resilient and ultimately successful in various social, physical, or economic environments. But Eduardo and Nicole want to standardize the methodology for investors and future community members to evaluate the communities they're considering. When is the first iteration of these certification standards likely to become public?
It's probably very close from having the first draft of it, and then probably go through some 30 months of polishing or so, and then have a first version out. Maybe through a council of experts, of other people who have already built communities or are in the process of, get their feedback, kind of like a closed circle council, if you would, that will help build on this and probably start using it in their communities and see how that goes. And then once that has a good backing or peer review, if you would, then go out and then say, okay, now we're ready for the world to absorb this, is backed and reviewed by XYZ, all these experts building communities in different parts of the world. This is their perspective, integrated already into the format. Probably it needs to go out with some sort of literature that explains the purpose, how to use it, how not to use it, and then the perspectives of people who have reviewed it.
Eduardo notes that Blue Dot is building the certification criteria on the work many other people and organizations have already done. He doesn't plan for Blue Dot to hoard credit for this first iteration of a certification process. He thinks of it as an open source project for which Blue Dot is simply paying for the first draft or two. He hopes that over time, many others will use it and will continue refining it in collaboration. Today you've heard about the nascent efforts to certify regenerative initiatives, and especially ways to certify projects that involve regenerative communities. You've heard how such certification is likely to benefit both potential investors and project developers. You've also learned about some of the nuances, complexities, and challenges of creating a certification system that accommodates a broad diversity of projects, and yet it still establishes standard, trustworthy rating criteria that are transparent, clear, and easy to understand. You can reach Nicole Reese by email through her newsletter, Terenity. Her email address there is hello@terenity.com. That's spelled T-E-R-R-E-N-I-T-Y with two R's. You can also subscribe to the newsletter Terenity through Substack. If you've enjoyed this episode of the Blue Dot Project podcast, please consider sharing it with friends and colleagues. Also consider signing up to receive notification of future episodes. If you'd like to keep up with other timely news about investing in regenerative initiatives, also check out the Blue Dot Brief on Substack. A new issue comes out every 2 weeks. Next time, we'll talk with Michel de Cameter, an entrepreneur and business consultant who leads a group called Extrapreneurs. The Extrapreneurs' mission is to create thousands of what Michel calls islands of regeneration around the world. They plan to do so by cultivating local regenerative entrepreneurship everywhere. Thanks to our post-production team, Fibeline DeMay and Maria Di Pace. I'm David Vronikar. See you next time.